we're coming in, and honestly, I mean, I'm going to guess that most people aren't giving us a chance to win this game. We know that if we play what our football game, do what we need to do, we can hang in there against anybody.
For decades, the Beaverton High School football program had been seen as the doormat of the Jack Pine Conference, but those days are long gone. The Beavers are undefeated and on the rise. The question now is, can they shock the world and pull off a monumental upset this Friday night? And that's A Duff Said. This is episode 18 of A Duff Said. I'm your host, Duff Tyler. Thank you so much for hitting the play button on Podbean. Now, we got a great show lined up for you this week. A little bit later, I'll be speaking with Freeland Falcons head football coach, Kevin Townsend. Now, he is our first ever three-time guest on this podcast, but since we last spoke to him, he's added a few milestones to his illustrious coaching career. So we'll touch base with him about that, as well as preview the Falcons' district championship game against Ogama Heights that goes down this Friday night. But before we get to that, I am joined now by the head football coach of the Beaverton High School football team. The Beavers are 10-0 for the first time in their program's history. And here to tell us about that and so much more about Beaverton is their head coach, Aaron Sizer. Coach, thank you so much for stopping in this week.
Well, thanks for having me.
It's good to have you here. Now, you and the Beavers are enjoying the best season in school history, and you guys are ranked 8th in the state in Division 7. What's it like for you and the guys to just go to practice every day, knowing what you've accomplished so far?
Yeah, well, we've been building towards this for the last few years. Nothing's been easy for our program. We've come from some dark places. We've had to overcome some pretty unflattering streaks of, losses against opponents. And it's just been a prolonged work. Kids had to buy in. We've had more and more kids commit. Of course, you got to have great players, and we've had some great players over the past few years. We had some great coaching going on, our assistant coaches, and, the community and the school need to be supportive. And we've had all that, and it's all kind of built up to now. I don't think anybody ever expected us to have the record we do. I sure didn't. But I expect us to get better every game, every week, every year, and we've been able to do that.
Looking at your record, I think the only thing that is more impressive than being 10-0 is the way that you guys got to 10-0. Your defense has 5 shutouts this season. In fact, they went throughout the month of October without giving up any points to anybody. When you guys are in the huddle after those wins and you look up at the scoreboard and you see zeros on it, what is that accomplishment like for you guys?
Everybody takes a lot of pride in that, and it takes a lot of effort. It not only takes the guys in the field, we got to have great scout teams during the week, and we've been able to do that the past few years. I've been really happy with the looks that we're able to give us to at least get a shot at preparing. You can't simulate everybody very well, all the time, but we've been able to do a pretty decent job of that. Guys take a lot of pride in what they're supposed to do. And I got to tell you, I stress to our guys a lot. We don't have a bunch of superstars. We've got guys who are pretty hard-nosed and they do their job. What we try to do defensively isn't too complicated most of the time. It requires a lot of discipline and you got to be pretty tough. And we found some of those kids for sure.
You may not have the superstars, but clearly you have the guys who are putting in the work and making a super effort for the Beaverton football program. Who are some of those guys that are grinding it out for you week in and week out?
Right. Well, it starts with our defensive line. We have a 3-year starter, Devin Tilkins, who has been our nose tackle and has done a great job for us. Jake Fisher and Will Aldrich are other people that play with their hand down the ground for us. Just very high motors. Just tough kids, and I don't want to take anything away from them. They're not outstanding physically, compared to some people would play, but they've got a great mentality, and that makes up for a lot. We've had solid linebacker play, of course. That's been a pretty constant with us, and of course defensive backs. They have a pretty simple job to do for us usually: stay back and don't get beat, make people snap the ball a number of times, and move it down the field. So, you know, we've had some guys step up and had some big years with that. Trent Reed and Dave Crone have accumulated quite a few interceptions by doing that. And, you know, everybody working together just kind of makes things run smoothly.
I think it's worth pointing out that you guys come from a very small community. In fact, a running gag where I work at is people often ask me, where's Beaverton? And I say, it's this little town way up that way. And that's about the time I start pointing up north. Now, you may come from a small community and you may not have the talent pools that they have in places like Midland or Fenton or Grand Blanc or even Metro Detroit. But what you do have is a group of guys that have the heart, the will, and the discipline to have made things very successful for your defensive unit.
Yeah, I mean, we're a small fish and pretty much a small pond, you know, we look at it. But kids take a lot of pride in what they do. The community is very sports-driven, a lot of support for that. Basketball has been a huge sport here at the school. But recently, we've also had great programs with baseball and wrestling. The girls' programs have been outstanding. And, you know, again, it takes great athletes to do that, but it also takes a lot of community involvement and school support. I mean, it just doesn't happen every year for everybody. You need everything working together and everybody taking a role, taking some ownership with that. You know, so that trickles down to what we're doing. I think, you know, I try to make sure our kids don't look past anything. We work week to week and, you know, we're not special. We're just trying to do our jobs and we're trying to get better every week.
When the season began, did you see your defense having the potential to be that dominant?
You know, no, I didn't. Honestly, I thought our team would, I thought we would be competitive enough to, you know, scratch our way to our playoff spot. I thought that's what we'd be able to do. You know, along the way things happen, you've got to figure out the other teams you're playing. You know, a lot of people lose people every year. We're the same. A lot of people ask me, well, you lost a lot of guys from last year's team that were really good players. And we did. We lost a lot of good football players. But I like to remind people that we have good football players and the kids who are here don't just automatically become great. They work at it and they get developed over a course of 3 to 4 years. So these kids have been able to do that. You know, did I expect this? No. But, you know, we play the teams in our schedule and we prepare for them the best we can. And, you know, we expect to get better. The saying goes for us, we're either getting better or we're getting worse. And so we have to evaluate that every week.
You guys got 5 shutouts this season, but there was none bigger than the one you guys got on October 11th. That date is going to live on in the minds of everyone in Beaverton. They're going to be talking about that one for years to come. That's because on that night, you led Beaverton to a win over Clare for the first time in 29 years. Now, Clare came into that game undefeated themselves, and you guys shut them down 20-0. And so, as that streak is about to come to an end, and you're watching the final seconds tick away on the sidelines, what was the mood and the atmosphere like at that moment?
You know, it's special. You know, we've been able to do some things with some streaks. I mean, the Gladwin streak was just as long that we were able to overcome. There's a number of teams in our league that we hadn't beaten in quite a long time. But the Clare one is special, probably personally, because I respect Clare and Kelly Luplo so much. You know, they've done a tremendous job with their program. They've set the bar for our area, for our conference in particular. So, you know, it means that personally to me, that was something that was special. But, you know, for the community, I know it's a big deal. I mean, that's the team in our conference. And in order to get on top, we've got to compete with them. We've got to eventually beat them. Over the past couple of years, we've had opportunities to go into that game and get a share of a league title or win it outright. And we just weren't able to get over the hump. You know, they have really good teams. They're well coached. But to do it this year, yes, it was special for sure. And, you know, people are very excited about that. So, and, you know, after the game, it's like, we sit in the huddle and like, guys, basically we've accomplished the last goal for our program. We wanted to beat every team in our conference and of course win a conference championship. And that win let us, you know, gave us at least a tie for it. And so, you know, it was a big night for us. You know, we got to sit back for just a second before we had to, you know, start planning for our next opponent, but just to kind of soak it in a little bit. It was a special time.
I have talked to a number of kids on the Clare football team, and they've told me they do not want to be on the team that lost that streak to Beaverton. And as for you guys, you've had some good teams in recent years, but Claire always seemed to find a way to get past you guys. So what was it about this year's team and this game in particular that made a difference?
Maybe the weather. It was a rainy, muddy night, and that was probably more advantage to us. I don't think there's any question about that, because Claire's always got a lot of good speed, a lot of athleticism, and that probably levels the field a little bit. You know, but we're just trying to play a solid, hard-nosed game. That's all we're trying to do. And we just happened to have Claire a night when things were going our way. That doesn't always happen when we play Claire. You know, 29 times in a row, it didn't go our way. So I don't know if we were due or what, but you know, our kids were playing confidently. And over the years, we've gotten a lot more confidence as a group. There's been plenty of times early on when I was here that, you know, some of the looks in the eyes before big games, you could just tell they didn't believe that they could do it. You know, that's gone now. And of course, we're going to play good teams, and we're going to respect our opponents, especially at Claire and Kelly's teams, that what he may have in the future. But I think that we know that we can compete with pretty much anybody now.
That was only week 8 on your schedule, and you still had plenty of teams left to play. But how did you guys celebrate that win?
It's just the typical, you know, hey, guys, enjoy this one for the weekend. Don't do anything stupid over the weekend and be ready to work on Monday. And that's pretty much what we do. We don't stray too much from our routine. You know, even this week, you know, a huge game coming up, but we don't stray too much from our practice plans and how we prepare weekly.
Like you said earlier, there have been some dark days in the history of the Beaverton football program. In fact, in most years, if you guys went 1-8, but you beat a Gladwin or a Clare, that would have been okay. That would have been the season, and that would have been just fine. But now that you guys have tasted success and you're winning week in and week out, beating Clare is now just another game on the schedule.
Yeah, well, you know, we can't get complacent, that's for sure, because we know what it's like when people aren't bought in and when we're not working hard and when we let things happen and we don't respond well to it. So I like to remind the kids, especially at the beginning of every season and throughout the season, of where we've come from. Because I was around the area when Beaverton's struggling, you know, and I know a little bit about it. And, you know, I always tell the kids, I don't blame the coaches there, the school, or anybody like that one bit. I knew there was athletes walking the halls in that school that could have made a difference. And they chose to kind of just walk away. And the attitude was, I'm not going to do that. You know, so they had a lot of good people that wanted to do a lot of good things there. And, you know, I'm fortunate enough to walk in at a time where we had some kids that thought football was a pretty good game to be playing, and they wanted to be involved with it. And I had a lot of good people that wanted to help. So, you know, people, I appreciate the recognition. People say, hey, you guys have done a great job. I'm going to tell you, it doesn't happen unless you have players who are committed, and they got to be pretty good, and you got to have great assistant coaches, and that school support's got to be there. You know, if you got all three, you got a chance.
When you brought those losing streaks against Claire and Gladwin to an end, how did the community react to that? Because you got people that have been with this program for decades now, and they didn't really have as much excitement as they do now following Beaverton. What was their reaction to that?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know everyone there. I'm still kind of an outsider. You know, I didn't grow up in the area, and I actually teach in Gladwin. So, you know, I don't know everyone, but the people I do know, I know there's a lot of pride. There's a lot of people who are ex-athletes from Beaverton that still come to games, you know, years and years removed from school. And I know they're very proud because they come up and they talk to our assistants or people who are part of our program that are locals. And they just let them know the pride they feel. And, you know, it's just something that you can sense on the sideline because, you know, they can come up and say, guys, you know, I was on the last team that did this, you know, like say in 1969, you know, and to kids, 1969 might as well be 1,000 years ago. You know, they don't grasp that, but, they get the understanding that, hey, what we're doing is special because it hasn't been done in a long time and the town is behind them and they appreciate that.
Okay. I am curious about one thing. You teach at Gladwin, but then you coach football at Beaverton. And like I just mentioned, they're rivals. So when you're in the hallway at Gladwin, what kind of reaction do you get in the hallways when they know that you're a part of two different worlds, essentially?
Well, I'm an elementary special education teacher. So So I'm kind of removed from the whole athletic side. We kind of have our own thing going on. So, you know, people are very friendly, you know, and that it, there's no animosity there at all. So, you know, I just kind of joke about things and, you know, they wish me luck every week, except if we're playing Gladwin, you know, that sort of thing. But, you know, I'm kind of removed from all that.
Now you're in your eighth season as head coach of the Beavers. You just wrapped up the regular season as champions of the Jack Pine Conference. It's the first time that Beaverton has won that title since 1989, and you're in the playoffs for the fourth straight year. So when you look at those accomplishments, what has this ride been like for you?
You know, I tell the kids, you know, I dreamed that this kind of stuff could happen when I was planning on applying for the job and when I eventually got it. I just didn't know how much of a reality it was. I thought we could get some kids out. I thought we could get things turned around in the direction that we'd want to go and be successful and be able to compete. You know, when you step back, yeah, you know, I'm very proud of what we've done. But again, it's not just me. We've had so many people that put in so much time, even, you know, behind the scenes, even that some of our players don't even realize, you know, the whole buy-in from our area has been tremendous. So yeah, you look, you step back, and I hope a lot of people take a lot of pride about what we do. But, you know, really personally for me, it's always kind of like, what's next? You know, I don't like to dwell on things. I'm kind of a worrier. I'm always a pessimist. Hey, this is coming up and we better be ready or this bad thing could happen. So I don't like to dwell too much on it. I guess one day when I'm done coaching, I can look back, but right now I want to keep us focused on what's ahead of us because expectations are higher and we know every game and every year, we're expected to perform at a certain level, and that's my job to hopefully get us to see that.
Like you alluded to, the program was a lot different from when you took over back in 2012. It was 0-9 the year before you came on board, and the Beavers had just one postseason berth in a 30-year span. So when you were looking at this program, what did you see in Beaverton that made you think this could be an ideal spot for me?
Well, I wanted to get back into coaching. I had coached throughout my teaching career. I was head coach at Houghton Lake and at Gladwin briefly. So I knew I wanted to get back in, and I had some connection to Beaverton. I have a friend who was on the coaching staff, so I kind of knew some of the guys. And, you know, it was just a chance to get back in. You know, I'm kind of locked into the areas I can coach at. You know, I'm not going to move around. I can't get a different job and maintain the lifestyle that my family is used to because you take a big pay cut if you start moving around. So, you know, I'm kind of locked into this area, and I thought, well, Beaverton might be a place that if nothing else, we can get things going and get things turned around, at least create some excitement and have some fun and enjoy coaching. So that's kind of what it was.
In order to turn things around at Beaverton and to get everyone to buy in, what were some things that had to change in order to get the program to where it is today?
Well, just stability. I mean, we've had almost the same coaching staff for the entire time. You know, we've had a few people come and go, but you know, the majority of the coaching staff stayed the same. And whenever that happens, you're going to have some positive results. Also, you know, it's not like demanding you must do things. I mean, kids got to buy in, they got to make their own commitment. But you know, getting the weight room a little bit more involved and a little more commitment to that's been huge for us. But also, since I'm not at the school daily, you know, I made sure that we're doing things outside the season. I still want to have football activities. So throughout our off season, my goal is to have at least one team event a month, so that we at least have an opportunity to get together, whether that's just getting pizza, bowling, golfing, something like that, something fun with the kids so we can hang out and get to know each other. Because, you know, we got to have that chemistry. And I think that the kids, you know, over time saw that, you know, we're all in this together. And the more we hang out together, the more opportunity we can develop that chemistry. And it's going to be easier to compete with each other during the football season. So, you know, everybody has their own ideas about how to run a program. We just happen to do things a certain way, and it's worked out for us.
You couldn't have asked for better results than what you guys have gotten this year. And now let's take a look at what you have in front of you this Friday night. We've talked so many times during this conversation about how well your defense has performed, but they're going to get a huge test this Friday night. You guys are taking on New Lothrop for the district championship, and they are, of course, the reigning Division VII state champions, and you guys have a long road trip just to get there.
Yes.
In a way, this is the game that really could determine just how far you truly have come. So what kind of test do you expect to get this Friday night?
Yeah, well, this is the measuring stick for sure. I mean, we've played teams that have had great success. We've played teams that have been to finals, have won finals in recent history. And so we're used to playing some bigger games now. But New Lothrop is a different animal. They, of course, they're reigning D7 champs. But, you know, historically, I want to say at least the last 20 years have been the playoffs. It seems like the last 10 years they've won 10-plus games. They've had a D1 recruit. You know, when you get to be Division 7, you don't usually have that sort of stuff. So they've got players. They got great coaching. When you watch the film, you know, you can sense that they have a lot of weapons offensively, a lot of speed defensively. But you know what? I told our kids as soon as they saw the drawings and how things could work out, you know, every step is just another opportunity to see where we're at as a program. You know, it's a great opportunity for us. We're coming in, and honestly, I mean, I'm going to guess that most people aren't giving us a chance to win this game. We know that if we play our football game, do what we need to do, we can hang in there against anybody. And, you know, if we can make it a 4-quarter game, then I like our chances. We just know that we can't be in awe of New Lothrop, and they're very deserving of all the recognition they get. They're an outstanding program, but our kids need to show up, and we need to get off the bus ready to play football, and I'm confident we'll do that.
If that happens and you guys are able to shock the world, what would it be like to take a district championship back home to Beaverton?
You know, any game where there's some sort of championship or trophy, I mean, it's a huge feeling. People get really excited about that. And it's just another step. I mean, we've never won a district championship. So it's another thing that we'd hope to accomplish as we're going through and building our program up. You know, more importantly to me, just like any game, I want us to show up and compete hard. We've been able to do that now for quite a few years. And, you know, when that happens, you expect it to happen every week. Now, regardless of the outcome, I expect us to show up and play our football game. Now, if we go up against somebody that's a little better than us, then you tip your cap to them and you congratulate them. But we expect to compete hard.
You've crossed off a number of things on your list this season. Why not one more on Friday night?
It'd be the greatest win in our program's history, no doubt about it.
He is Aaron Sicer, the head football coach at Beaverton High School. Coach, thank you so much again for making the time this week.
Oh, thank you very much.
You're very welcome, Coach. Thank you so much for stopping in to talk to us about Beaverton football. Now, in the past, we've had New Lothrop head coach Clint Galvis on the show. In fact, he's been on here twice to talk about the Hornets. And so I want to wish both New Lothrop and Beaverton the very best of luck this Friday night. Up next, Kevin Townsend just reached the century mark, and he's going to join us to tell us all about it. And that's A Duff Said. Want to get my takes on sports here in the state of Michigan? Well, that's easy. All you got to do is go to my Facebook page, sports journalist Duff Tyler. You can also find me on Twitter. I have the handle at DuffTyler. And you can also listen to previous episodes of A Duff Said. Just go to my website, DuffTyler.podbean.com. I am joined now by a man who is in his 14th season as the head coach of the Freeland Falcons. The Falcons are 8-2, and they host Ogemaw Heights this Friday night for the district title. Kevin Townsend is my guest, and Kevin, you are the first 3-time guest since I have started this podcast, A Duff Said, and as always, thank you so much for making the time.
Well, awesome. I didn't know that, so thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Hey, this has been a couple of weeks of milestones for you, my friend, because I want to go back 2 weeks ago. You just wrapped up the regular season with a win over Chippewa Hills, and it was your 100th career win. What does it mean to get to the century mark in career victories for you?
Well, obviously, you've got to, you have to be able to stick with it. And, you know, and the way the coaching goes today, that, you know, if you're not successful, you know, they're going to move on and find somebody else. So I've been fortunate enough to have a great support staff of coaches around me and a great community that has supported everything that we've done. And obviously, I've coached some pretty good kids along the way also. And it's awesome because when that win came in, my phone kind of blew up with a lot of former players, not only parents and stuff, but former players that I'd coached, you know, 14, 13, 12 years ago, just with the compliment. And my instant response back to them was, thank you, and I'm so glad that you were part of some of those wins.
That was a special night for you, and this was a massive achievement. Everything was planned out that evening. The kids made a huge banner for you to commemorate it, and your wife Jennifer made sure that she had a spare change of clothes for you because everybody was anticipating the Gatorade bath for you. What was it like to get this achievement with the current group that you have?
Well, you know, I think some people doubted us. I think going into the season, I didn't even really know about it. One of the boys had said something during 7-on-7 in the summertime that if we got 7 wins this year, the coach would get his 100th. So you just kind of start thinking about it in the back of your head and looking into it. And my brain was going, hey, if we go undefeated, our 7th win would be at Swan Valley. And, you know, how sweet would that be to play a rival team and get that 7th win? But unfortunately, we had a loss before then and then got spanked over at Swan Valley. So it just fell on a different game. And, you know, and going into that game, I didn't know that, you know, that they were going to have a banner, that the kids wanted to do a Gatorade bath or anything else like that. For me, my worry was is that if something like that came up, would the other coach be kind of irritated at the fact that we were already planning on winning before that game? So we just went into that game knowing that we had a chance to be 7-2 and get a home playoff game is kind of what we thought. And we ended up getting that win and getting 2 home playoff games. So, you know, it just the positive things just kept getting better.
Yeah, things have been going great for you guys. And you have 3 assistant coaches that have been with you going back to the days when you first took over the program. How many of those wins do you attribute to them?
Well, without a doubt, my first year in Freeland, I had a couple of coaches that are no longer at the school anymore that are retired and stuff. And we were just starting to begin a program. John Nixon was the head coach before me. He had a couple of successful years in there and then a couple of down years. And so it just was kind of his time to move on. I love John. John's the one that gave me the start. But he just kind of wanted to walk away from the game. So when I came into it, the group that I had that year, we won 1 game. And, you know, I had some good athletes. We didn't have a lot of people, a lot of kids. But I don't think I really knew what the hell I was doing either. So we won 1 game that year. The next year we started out 1-4. Ended up winning our last 4 games of the season. And then that's when the kind of coaches changed. And I ended up, Jeff Catlin, I did my student teaching with Jeff at Carleton High School. Jeff had just stopped coaching at Carleton, and I went to him immediately and asked him if he wanted to come over and see what we had going on. He came in and really liked what he saw. So he came on and became my defensive coordinator. And then Paul LaFon had been coaching at Lowell High School. His wife got transferred to Dow up here. He got a 6th grade teaching job. So again, another guy that kind of fell into my lap. He became our defensive line coach. And then Bill Wheeler was here with me on my first few years when we started. So when those extra 2 guys came on, that really changed the program. It gave me 2 more varsity football coaches on my staff. And we kind of talked about the fact that that this wasn't going to be my program. This was going to be our program. And if it was going to be my program, we're going to be in trouble. But I needed their talents and their abilities to turn this program in the direction that we've got it going.
Like you said, you took over the program at Freeland 14 years ago. You were 1-8 in that first season. What were some of the lessons that you were taught as a coach in that first season?
Well, again, we didn't have very many kids come out for the team, so we actually pulled up. I think we had like 7 sophomores on the team that year, and you're not supposed to win too many games when you have 7 sophomores, you know, on there. When those 7 sophomores were seniors, along with the rest of those boys, we went 10-2, and we went undefeated in the conference, and we lost to Ovid Alsea in the regionals that year. So, you know, it's just kind of taking it in stride. I had a couple of games that I felt that we could have won if I would have coached a little bit differently, and I always tell my coaching staff to learn 1 thing new and, grow from that and don't let those mistakes happen again. And I think there were some mistakes I look back in there where we had a play called at the line of scrimmage and there was some controversy with the clock and I left my kids at the line of scrimmage and didn't huddle them back up. And we went up and snapped the ball and we fumbled the snap and ended up ultimately losing that game. And I put that on me. So that's something that you take from it. But, you know, now I'm sitting here with this team that we have, and we're starting seven sophomores on varsity, and we're 8-2. So, you know, here we are 14 years later, and I'm doing the same thing I did back then. But like I said, I've got the guys around me to help support it, and we've got a program that believes in winning. And so, you know, we've just grown a lot in 14 years.
14 years later, you have reeled off 13 winning seasons in a row, and you've made the playoffs in 12 of those years. What has made all that possible?
Again, kids, hard work, winning is contagious. You know, weight room program, we obviously have had really good athletes. But I think, you know, we have a sign that we have out on the corner in town, and it says Community Strong. And you've got support. Obviously, we've lost games, you know, along the way, and nobody's happy when you lose. But everybody just seems to come back and support, you know, what we're doing. We used to go into the playoffs, or sorry, we used to go into the season kind of looking at games we thought we could get and some toss-up games, you know, one way back and forth. And, you know, a week one or a week nine game schedules might be an opponent that we thought we could get. Now we're scheduling. I mean, Marshall was our opening game, you know, the last couple of years, and they just won a first-round playoff game, you know, this year, and we had Frankenmuth for quite a few years at week nine. We're not dodging people. We're playing, you know, the teams that are out there for us, and that makes us a better team, better program when we get to the playoffs. And, you know, it's been fun getting to them. We just would like to get over the hump and get a regional that we haven't had a chance to get to, and then obviously get a trip down to Ford Field.
You have accomplished so much in that time, and you've now got 101 career wins. But getting back to career win number 100, that moment was not without a little bit of controversy. There were a couple of unsportsmanlike penalties in that game that were assessed to Freeland, not necessarily you, but to the team. And as a result of that, you got ejected from what was supposed to be a milestone evening for you. And now the officials are telling you you're forced to watch this game from the stands. This is like a big moment for you in your career, and now you got to be a spectator to it. Considering how much anticipation went into that night, how frustrating was it for you that you had to leave the field and watch this banner moment for you in your career from afar?
Well, again, I'm not a real controversial guy. I don't like, which is crazy because I was growing up, but it was a surreal moment when they told me that I had two personal fouls assessed to me, and I knew I didn't, and the referee that threw both the flags knew I didn't either, and it was just a mistake that was made in there. But I was stunned, I guess, because I never, you know, you hear coaches say things like, I didn't do anything, there's no way I should have been ejected. In that game, when the first penalty was thrown, we were up 10-0. And then when I was ejected, we were up 17-7. I never even took my play sheet out. You know, it was kind of that flow of the game where there was no reason to have any argument or situations with the referee. It was just one of those things where a kid swore on the sideline. And like I said, I'm not that we condone it by any means, but I'm sure swearing happens in games and sidelines all the time. And the referee threw a flag. And when he came over, I asked him who was on, and he said he didn't know. He just knew somebody behind him swore. And I said, well, I wanted to know who it was because I wanted to tell that kid, because if that kid gets another one, he's going to get ejected. And they assessed it to me. And I joked about it with him. I called him by his name and said, you know what, you know it's not on me. And he told me to control my team. He said, one voice, one team, control your team. So I did. I called timeout. I brought my team off the field, brought all my kids off the sidelines, and I explained to them that the next kid that swears, I was going to get ejected for it. And if I get ejected, you're going with me, because there's no reason why I'm taking a punishment for something that someone else is doing. And I thought that was good. I talked to the referee. I thought we were good. And then the flow of the game went. A situation where they had a false start. It didn't get called. Everybody in the stands screamed it just like you would in any other game. One of our coaches literally said, come on. He yelled it, come on. Not at anybody, just in general, come on. Threw a flag, had a meeting out in the middle of the field. They came back and they assessed that penalty to me also. With about 6 minutes to go in the half, and had me leave. And I literally just said to them, you're going to take something away from me that I'm never going to get back, and you're not going to let me coach next week in the playoffs. And I looked at the referee that threw the flag, and I go, and you know for a fact I did nothing on either one of those plays. And they asked me to leave, and I did. I walk up the field, set my headphones down and walked out the back of the end zone to the locker room. Never did I yell, scream, or anything else like that. And so it was a very long Friday evening and Saturday and Sunday and Monday. And Tuesday, our athletic director got a phone call from the state, and they had said that they had checked the film, saw that I never even moved on the camera, did anything wrong, and the referee said that they should have assessed the first penalty to the player that swore. If they'd asked me who it was, I either would have made somebody up or told them if I knew who it was, and then I was wrongly ejected, and then I was cleared to play. So I didn't care about anything else. I didn't care about what the report actually said or anything else like that. All I know is that Tuesday afternoon, my athletic director came into my room, and I was teaching, and he gave me the thumbs up and said, "You're cleared to play." And those were some pretty happy words for me.
Yeah. How relieved were you when you got that news? Because like you said, it was a long weekend, because even though you got a chance to celebrate career win number 100 with your guys, your family, and the community, you still had to wonder, okay, am I going to get to coach this playoff game now? Because the rules state that if you get an ejection the next week, you have to sit that one out. So I imagine that had to be some pretty tense moments for you. What was going through your mind during that whole weekend period when you had to wait to get the news that you would be able to coach against Shepherd ultimately?
Well, you know, it's huge. So Saturday morning, you know, you get up and you're kind of in a fog still. You know you're not coaching next Friday. My athletic director came over to the to my house, told me what the report said. The report wasn't what actually happened in the game. So that's why we were kind of upset about it. We got the film, sent the film in. The film showed we have an end zone camera and a sideline camera that showed that I did nothing besides just stand there. And then nothing we could really do. We just had to wait. And then Sunday you get up and watch a little bit of football in the morning. We rent out the Second Street pub in town. We have a selection show. We're watching the selection show. We find out who we get. The place erupts. We're all excited. Deep down inside in my brain, I'm still thinking I don't even get to coach this game, and now I'm being a little bit selfish. Monday rolls around, and we've been up since midnight, scheming up how to beat Shepherd. And everything that's running through my brain as a scheme of what we're going to be able to do, I'm not going to get to do on Monday. So, you know, now you're the head coach. You walk into practice on Monday, and you've got a game plan on what you're going to do, but I'm not part of that game plan. You know, I've got to trust my coaching staff, and I did. Ron Kowalski called all of our plays once I had to leave the game. We were up 17-7. Chippewa Hills came out in the second half on fire. They jumped out on us 21-17, and Ron did a great job of keeping our offense settled down, and we drove down and scored on them in the fourth quarter and took the lead and ended up getting a safety towards the end of the game. So, just like I said, down in the dumps, and like Jeff walked into my classroom, walked in, he shook my hand, looked at me, gave me the thumbs up. I go, "Can I coach?" And he just started to walk away and gave me the thumbs up, and he left. And the first thing I did was grab my phone, and I texted my wife and said, "I think I'm going to cry because Jeff just told me I can coach." And then she texted all of her girlfriends, all the SAC mom and dads, and I bet you I had 50 messages on my phone within 10 minutes, that everybody was excited that it was overturned and that I was going to be able to coach.
Your phone blew up all over again, and I'm really happy that you were able to coach in the district game last week, because I got to tell you and I have worked together now for about 5 years. And as far as coaches go with, the vocalization and the animation that goes on the sidelines, you're probably one of the least animated guys that I've seen on the sidelines. You're all business on the sidelines, and you pretty much keep things level headed. So I'm really glad that this didn't come down on you a lot worse than it could have.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I'm by no means an angel, and you're making me sound like one a little bit there, but I have my flaws like everybody else's, but you're also trying to be a role model to the kids. And so if I'm going to go, crazy on coach, on referees, and I'm going to swear and I'm going to do these things, then, it kind of gives a green light to my kids that they can do the same thing. And they know that that's not tolerated, and that it's our job to talk to the referees and my players' jobs to play. So, obviously there are some referees out there that would disagree with me. And that's understandable. But I was blindsided by it, but I knew, you how many times you watch a baseball game where an umpire, where a manager gets ejected and, he spits and hollers and kicks dirt all over the guys. And then the umpire goes, "Oh, never mind. We'll overturn it and you can come back and play." So I knew once they ejected me, just go. You know, you're out. There's nothing you're going to do that's going to change this. But just keep your cool, keep your head, and you know, maybe something will come good of this. So hopefully somebody can take that lesson and it'll help them out in the future.
You still did get to celebrate career win number 100 with your team, your coaching staff, and the community. Ultimately, even though there was kind of this dark cloud hanging over it, how good did it feel to celebrate with all of them?
Well, they've been there since day one. I mean, you know my story better than everybody else, but when you've got, you know, Bryson Huckabee as a quarterback who's been bringing Oreos to my house for the last, 10 years as kind of a Thursday night tradition, and then all of a sudden now he's your quarterback. I've grown in this community. I've been teaching here for 20 years, so, you've impacted a lot of kids and a lot of families, so supportive. You know, to go to the pub and they had balloons up and there were T-shirts made and stuff. And again, kind of a humble guy. I was kind of irritated, and my wife will tell you I didn't really want to wear the 100 shirt because I didn't feel like I had coached it, that I had left that game and I had let my team down. But she was like, you're the one, who got them there. And obviously your staff helps you with those things too. But it was awesome. It was a very surreal moment.
Once you were able to put all of that behind you and get to the district game against Shepherd, things just get even better for you because your guys had a very impressive and convincing win over Shepherd that night. And then on top of all of that, your dad flies out from North Carolina to be a part of this, and it was your wife Jennifer's birthday. How special was it for you to celebrate all of that with them?
Again, keep in mind that all that was going down and I wasn't going to get to celebrate all that stuff. Well, I was. I just wasn't going to get to coach that game. And that's kind of when I had said to those referees, you're going to take something away from me that I'm never going to get back. My dad had already planned on flying in Wednesday. I hadn't seen him since the 4th of July. And my nephew's birthday was on Halloween. And then my wife's birthday was on the night of that game. And I would have been sitting at home, watching that game on television. So to be able to have that back was just an amazing, feel. And my boys went out and played absolutely outstanding football game. Jeff Catlin, our defensive coordinator, and Dave Shawman, my defensive back coach, and Jessica, my linebacker coach, had our defense playing immaculate. We were up 35-0. We've got every single one of our kids that we pulled up, all of our freshmen, all of our sophomores, all got to play in that game. So, it went from being a nightmarish, weekend against in a selfish way to being an amazing weekend that impacted a lot of kids and got us a win in a district game, giving us a chance at a district championship.
You know, Kev, you remind me of that phrase that Jim Harbaugh likes to use a lot when he always says, who's got it better than us? And for you, you have had such an amazing year. So who's got it better than you right now? Because in addition to all the success and the career milestones that you've enjoyed this year, you also got a chance to share this moment this past Friday with your dad. And earlier this year, your son Jack got a spot on the football roster with Saginaw Valley State. So things are going really well for you. What has this ride been like for you?
Like I said, undescribable. It's a dream for me. I mean, to be able to coach, my youngest son and my middle son, Zachary and Jack, my oldest boy, Jacob, was never really into sports and stuff, but would still be down on the sidelines supporting everything we did. Zachary was an all-state corner for us. Jack was an all-state linebacker. The thing I love about both of them in that aspect is they both did it on the defensive side of the ball. So some people could say that I threw the ball to them 50 times a game to try to pad their stats. What they did was the defensive side. So Jack, earned himself a spot on Saginaw Valley's football team. It's an amazing ride. And to coach your boys, and we've had some injuries, throughout the years, and that sucks when you lose kids because they're close to every single one of them. But, my boys were able to get through with minor injuries and stuff, and that's always, every game you walk out to, that's kind of gut-wrenching. And, now I have, no children of my own in the system, and yet my wife is still in the stands, along with all of her girlfriends and stuff, still cheering and supporting. Again, I guess my boys, they're just not having to be my sons. So it's an amazing community. We're a closed school district, so we only have our kids. We don't get transfer kids that come in, so we win with the athletes that grow up here in our town. And you know them when you're little. My ball boys are little guys that come to my youth camp and play in our youth program. And it's just awesome, an awesome, awesome community to be part of.
You got a shot at career win number 102 this Friday night, but I want to go back 14 years ago. What do you remember about that one win that you got in that first year? What do you remember about your first win?
Well, it was against Chesney, and Jim Zappin was the head coach there. He had won two state championships with Chesney football. I remember that I had some pretty good athletes in the wrong positions. One of the highlight plays that I'll always remember is David Lewis was a kid who benched over 300 pounds for us. We were playing Cass City the last game of the season. Was just kind of perturbed that we weren't putting up the offensive points and stuff that we wanted to. So I put David back on kickoff, and they kicked the ball to him. And Dave was probably about 230, 235 pounds and all muscle. And he returned the kickoff 88 yards for a touchdown. And I kind of thought to myself, you're a moron of a coach. Why didn't you have that kid back there, you know, a long time ago? But, you know, we played my first year as a head coach, our conference switched. We used to have Carleton and Seminary and Merrill and St. Charles in our conference. It switched out. We ended up picking up Alma and Ovid and Shepherd and Chesney. So that was the first time we had played Chesney in school history. And so we played them 12 years in a row before their conference left, and we never lost to Chesney in the 12 years that I've been here. So that was kind of a monumental win for me. I have a picture that my wife made that's hanging on my wall in my classroom of my first win. So it's kind of a, you know, just kind of a cool thing that sparked it off. And again, 12 years in a row, we were able to beat that school.
We're talking with Freeland football coach Kevin Townsend. This Friday night, the Falcons are hosting Ogemaw Heights in the district championship game. You guys are 8-2 going into this game. And like you said at the beginning, not necessarily too many people had you in this particular spot being 8-2. So what has gotten you guys to this point?
Just not giving up. We played Marshall week one, a much bigger school than us. We went through a double overtime game with them to be able to nip them by one. Then we played Garber the next week, gave up a couple big explosive plays, and were able to win that game 29-20. We played Frankenmuth up 7-0 at halftime, ended up losing that game 21-7. So we thought we could play with the big boys. Had some major injuries, lost Jack Dreyer and lost Cole Weese in week three, and that really hurt us running the ball and on our offensive defensive line. The next couple weeks later, we had a concussion and another injury, went into the Swan Valley game without seven starters and got our butts handed to us, and that kind of brought our team back together, taught some of our young kids how to step up, and then a couple weeks later, we lose another defensive back in Jaden DeBoe. Will Von Dett got a concussion in the Swan Valley game, another senior. So we're sitting with a team right now that had 11 seniors at the start of the year. We've got a couple of boys on that team who haven't played much through the system, two other seniors out. So we're really looking at, like I said, two boys with limited experience and then seven seniors. So we're a super young team. But we've trailed in quite a few games this year, and our boys just never have given up, and they just keep believing in each other and believing in our coaches and believing in our system. And that's all we're doing is just scratching and fighting.
You mentioned Jack Dreyer and the injury he suffered. He came back to get two touchdowns for you last Friday in the win over Shepherd. How thrilled were you with that performance and just the way he was able to bounce back?
Yeah, he came back a couple of weeks ago and was able to kick. Conversation with mom and dad was that they were going to go get a brace for his shoulder. He completely dislocated his shoulder in the Frankenmuth game and had to go to the hospital and be put under to have it put back in. So even to have him back is obviously a joy. But we only played him in defense against Chip Hills. He went in an offense after I had left the game, but not really to run, just kind of to block. We didn't want to take a big beating. You know, we came into this game, and I know Jack really wanted to start this game, but it was one of those where I was worried about him just going in and wanting to do more than what I needed him to do and hitting that shoulder and hurting him. I really needed him defensively. So I think it kind of ticked him off a little bit. And once he got in, I mean, he was a machine. I think he was 7 for 73 and caught a touchdown pass on a fourth down play. And then obviously played an awesome defensive game for us too. So definitely a huge lift to our team to have him back.
And every week, Bryson Huckabee, your quarterback, he just keeps getting better and better with each week. He's only a sophomore, and he seems to be picking up the position pretty well.
Yeah, you know, he in our Birch run game, he threw for 279 yards and 3 touchdowns. And, you know, I'm not sure that might be the most that any quarterback has thrown for us in that game. Since I've been here, we've had some pretty good quarterbacks come through. Just smart, you know, he's a sponge. You tell him stuff and he soaks it in. Again, not a lot of seniors, but the seniors that we have are very special kids, and they're very open and willing to accept, you know, Bryson as being our leader. Multiple of our seniors right now got pulled up as sophomores during the regular season. They all came up for the playoffs, so they understand what it's like to have a sophomore quarterback. We've played many sophomore quarterbacks, in the years I've been here, and kind of have been able to confuse some of them with some different coverage schemes and things that we run. And, you know, Bryson right now is, he's 9, he's 10, 12, he's 10-3 as a starting quarterback, and he's a sophomore. He went 2-1 last year as a freshman for us. So, you know, just a big kid, like I said, super, super, super smart. And, you know, he's an awesome, awesome kid to be running your show.
This Friday night, your Falcons take on Ogama Heights in the district championship game. This is a game that's going to be played at your house. Now, looking at Ogama Heights, they're in the postseason for the first time since 2013. Now, as for your roster, you have some seniors on your team that have been to this stage before. In fact, some of them have been there a couple of times. So is there an edge in the experience factor for you guys as opposed to Ogama that's getting their first look at it in 6 years?
Well, you know, they have a first-year head coach. So he's obviously our head coach there. So he's obviously changed, you know, the belief system there. Like I told you here, winning is contagious. You get kids believing in things. So they've got a really nice senior class. They don't have a lot of seniors, neither do we. But the kids that they do have are very physical, very big kids. So, you know, do we have the experience? I guess the one positive thing that we have over them is we're home. You know, they're the ones that have to get on a bus Friday after, you know, being in school all day and make that travel down here to us. You know, we're on turf all week practicing. I'm not sure what they're on, but by the looks of their field from their last week's game, they're not practicing on a nice surface. So that kind of gives us an advantage. But, you know, they've got a kid, a big tight end that's committed to Eastern Michigan. We don't have any of those type of kids on our team. They've got another big 6'5" receiver who's a senior. Our 6'5" kid's a sophomore. You know, we're gonna roll out there, like I said, multiple sophomore kids. So we're gonna need our seniors to step up really big and ride the experience that they had from last year and the year after. But you know, it's our home field. It's for a district championship. You know, we tell the kids it's for a plaque on the wall. So you want to come back here 20 years from now and see what you did. Put a plaque on the wall, and you know, it'll always be there for you. So we're just excited that we're still alive and we're practicing. We have all of our JV kids pulled up, so they got another week of practice in versus some of our opponents that didn't make the playoffs. So we're just worrying about us and what we can control and take it from there.
A win this Friday would give you your 4th district championship at Freeland, but I know there are some guys on your roster that have their eyes set on bigger goals. How special would it be if you guys were able to capture the school's first regional championship since the 1990s?
That would be unreal. I mean, it would be I've never won one, right? So when you look at the fact of you know, what it takes, and not knocking on any other sport, but you know, to get to a regional game in basketball or in baseball or in soccer or anything, you know, you have to win a couple of games to get there. In football, you've got to win enough games to even get in, you know, in the first place. And so, you know, I guess I look at it, and I'll just use basketball for example. You know, if you start out 0-5 in your conference, you can kind of skate through the next 15 games of the season, coaching your kids and getting ready to play in the postseason. We never really have that opportunity. So, you know, as I've been telling you how beat up we are and how many kids we have out that are injured, there's no chance to rest anybody. You know, so and now every team that we play, has the same record that we do, which is 0-0. You know, if you don't win, you're going home. So for us to be able to get there, you know, we're going to play, if we're fortunate enough to get this win on Friday, or the same thing with Ogama Heights, you're going to play either the number one or the number two team in the state. Because right now, Muskegon Oak Ridge is number one in Division 5 and Kingsley's number two, and they're playing each other. And we're definitely going on the road. But, you know, just give us that opportunity. The last time we got there, we played Lansing Catholic Central. The year before that, we had to go up to Menominee and play. And those are perennial powerhouse teams that are in it every single year. So, you know, Oak Ridge hasn't been to a regional game in a few years. I know Swan Valley got them a couple years back. So we're just going to take this game. Like I said, get out of this game, hopefully with a win and healthy, and maybe get a couple kids back and have a nice long bus ride across the state somewhere.
He is Kevin Townsend, the head coach of the Freeland Falcons football team. The Falcons host Ogama Heights for the district championship this Friday night. Kevin, I wish you all the best in that game come Friday.
Well, thank you very much for having me on.
And that'll wrap it up for episode 18 of A Duff Said. Join us next week for episode 19, when my guest will be Central Michigan volleyball coach Mike Golic. If you would like to hear that episode or previous episodes of A Duff Said, all you got to do is go to dufftyler.podbean.com. Until next time, this is Duff Tyler reminding you that if Duff said it, it must be true, because that's what A Duff Said.